When I began podcasting at the start of this year, it was quite enjoyable for a few weeks. But then by the middle of February, with the Synod of the Church of England, it all just got a little bit boring, actually, to be honest. The idea of having to create a script and then share it with you and go through the effort of recording and not really have many people listen to it anyway, and who cares what I say? Well, I gave it up. And I was busy with work and family and all that kind of stuff. Well, that was until today. Until today, Sunday, the 9th of July. And here I am recording live without a script with just a few notes because I've just heard the news from General Synod. General Synod has passed a motion to ask the House of Bishops to prepare liturgies for welcoming transgendered people after a gender transition into church with their new gender identity. And this is a really, really bad thing. This is a horrendous thing. And let me explain why. Actually, it's not a bad thing. For some of us who are evangelicals but open on the T issue of LGBT, and as I keep on saying through everything I have said and written and broadcast, that the LGB and the T issue are entirely different. For those of us who are quite open on the T issue, the trans issue, this is not necessarily a bad thing. I've written in the past that the trans issue is completely separate to the LGB issue because it deals with different things. And look, here's the thing. You can have a conservative view of scripture rooted in a core gender identity of male and female and still support transgendered and people who do gender transitions, because fundamentally you could take the view, the I think biblically valid view, that we live in a fallen, broken world and that people who experience gender dysphoria may be experiencing a fundamental, as it were, brokenness in their gender sex continuum, so that even though ideally their gender and their sex would be the same, they find it different. And you know what? It's quite hard to argue from the Bible fundamentally which of the two, of the gender or the sex, or my deep down gender identity, which may be different to my physical biological sex. It's quite hard to argue which is the core part of my identity. And therefore, if I enter a gender transition surgery, am I actually moving more towards my true self rather than keeping in the sex which actually isn't really me? Throw into that mix all the kind of issues we have around intersex, and we have around all kinds of other chromosomal issues around the sex chromosomes, and you see that this is a very interesting place to be, and it's certainly fundamentally different from LGB stuff, which tends to be in the Bible about sexual behavior, not core identity. So, it is possible to be an evangelical like myself and to be very, very open to the idea of gender transition being a good thing. And yet, this motion is a very, very bad thing for the one simple reason that it is an incredibly un-Anglican approach to doing liturgy. Let me tell you that again. It is a very un-Anglican approach to doing liturgy. You see, the way that we Anglicans do liturgy is important because liturgy for Anglicans is the final written expression of our doctrinal position. Other denominations have creedal statements, have confessions. So, you know, you have the Heidelberg confession, you have the Westminster catechisms coming out of the Lutheran, the Presbyterian traditions. And this is how they make their final definitive statements on their doctrine. They write them down as creeds and confessions. But we don't do that. As Anglicans, we express our theology as liturgy. Lex orandi, lex credendi. What we pray is what we believe. But that doesn't mean that we can just pray something and it becomes doctrine. No, because we understand that our liturgy is the expression of our doctrine, the way that we do our liturgy is that first we discuss something as a church and we do it widely. We explore all the issues and we bring all the different parties are together to thresh it out. Secondly, the bishops, who are the episcopal guardians, the apostolic successors of those who first taught the faith. The bishops then give us a teaching and bring together what is the mind of the church and express it. And that is their job. It is not sinners' job to do that. It is the House of Bishops' job to be the guardians of the faith and to express what that faith is. And only when we have discussed it and then the bishops have taught and decided what is and isn't to be taught, then we create liturgy for it. So take, for example, two of the contentious issues of the last few decades. Firstly, divorce after marriage after divorce. I told you that this was live and straight to the thing. Marriage after a divorce. Our second issue, women priests. What happened in both of those processes? Well, firstly, we talked about it. And then we talked about it. And then we talked about it even more. And all the different viewpoints came together and worked through together what those different viewpoints were, where they interacted, what the grounds of commonality were, what the grounds of difference were. Then after that, the bishops went away and produced their statement as to what they saw the mind of the church being based on the discussions that we had, some of which, for example, on women priests, were well over a decade of discussing, and for women bishops, almost two decades of discussing and working through and coming to a conclusion as to where we stood, what the mind of the church was. And only at that point did we bring forward liturgies to support that doctrinal understanding. So particularly, for example, on the women priests, the liturgical change was to change our ordination service. There were small changes, tiny changes, but they only came after years and years of discussion. And then the House of Bishops carefully, critically articulating where we stood on the subject. And it doesn't matter where you stand on those issues. It doesn't matter whether you think the current stance of the Anglican Church, of the Church of England in particular, is right or wrong on marriage after the divorce, is right or wrong on women priests and bishops. At least we did our theology, at least we created our liturgy in an Anglican way. Today, this afternoon, the Church of England tore that up. Because instead of doing our theology first on the transgender issue, instead of having a critical evaluation of the different perspectives and looking where we stood, instead of the bishops then and only then coming to us with a teaching document, with a clear articulation of what the mind of the church was in their roles as the guardians of the faith, as the apostolic successors, instead of doing that, we just had a vote as to what truth was in synod, without anything before or any consideration about afterwards. That has fundamentally torn up the way we as Anglicans do liturgy. There are three things that I want you to think about from this. Firstly, where were the theologians standing up and saying in synod that what we were about to do was deeply un-Anglican? Well, John Dunnett stood up and said it, and I think a few others did. But to be honest, I didn't listen to the debate because I had enough of the back and forth yesterday that I just wanted to go and spend the afternoon with my family. They deserved it. Secondly, why didn't the bishops object? Why couldn't the bishops stand up and say, Synod, this is not how we do theology and liturgy. We haven't arrived at a point yet where we understand as a church what our mind is on this issue, so we cannot have liturgy. It would be deeply un-Anglican for us to do this. That's what the role of the bishops is. No, instead we had John Sentamu as the chief cheerleader for this. This man is the Archbishop of York, a man I respect deeply, a man who comes from the same theological stable as me. But what was going on this afternoon? Were we so obsessed as a church in trying to look trendy and hip and with the culture and speaking to it, that in doing so, we sold out our denominational birthright and heritage? And three, And this is the most alarming. And every single evangelical who voted for this motion must understand this. Now that we have laid down the principle that the House of Bishops are subject to Synod and must simply produce a liturgy when Synod tells them to, without any pre-thought, without any theology, without the necessary conversation in the church, without the bishops seeking to discern what the mind of the church is in their role. Now we have established that that is worthless. What is to stop the revisionists coming to the February group sessions of Synod next year with a motion to ask the House of Bishops for same-sex blessings liturgies? Because today, the House of Bishops said there is nothing to stop them doing that. And unless the House of Bishops turn around to Synod and say to them, we can't just give you the liturgies for the things that you want, we have to go through a proper process, unless they do that in response to this motion passed this afternoon, they will not be in a place to do that next February when the motion comes to have same-sex blessings and ask the bishops for that liturgy. We have torn up the rule book this afternoon. We have betrayed Anglicanism, and it has nothing to do with the transsexual issue at all. It has nothing to do with that. It's a much, much deeper thing. It is a horrifying thing that we have done this afternoon. We have declared as the Church of England that we can just make up liturgy and therefore theology on the fly. And have we done it because we think it's a good thing? Have we done it because we think it's expedient to go with what we feel? Have we done it because we think it's necessary to tear up the rules and processes of the Church of England in order to get things done? That great play, A Man for All Seasons, has a brilliant moment in it where Sir Saint Thomas More is talking to his daughter's fiancé. And Richard Rich has just come in and basically threatened to go elsewhere if Thomas More will not give him a living. And his soon-to-be son-in-law turns to Thomas More and says, that man is dangerous, arrest him. And Thomas More says, why, what has he done? And his future son-in-law says he's a danger. And Thomas More says, that isn't a crime. Would you have me tear up the law to arrest him because I think he's dangerous? And his future son-in-law says yes. And then Thomas More says to him, and let's say you were trying to chase after the devil, and the devil hid behind the law, and you basically went and tore up every single law to get to the devil. What would you then do if right at the end, when you have torn up every single law of the land of England, that the devil then turns round and attacks you, what will you then use to defend yourself? And his future son-in-law is silent. Today, the Church of England tore up its processes, its understanding of the way that Anglicans do theology and liturgy. It just tore them up in the language of Aldous Huxley in Brave New World, as Mustapha Mond is talking to the students in the second chapter and describing the history of the world and describing how they have taken Henry Ford saying history is bunk and just got rid of history. Whisk, 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 away it goes. Whisk, away goes history. Whisk, away goes processes. Whisk, away goes law and order. Today, we have torn up the rule book. Today, we have given away our denominational heritage. And unless the House of Bishops realise this, and unless they stand up and quickly respond to what has been done, understand their error in supporting this motion, not for the subject of the motion, but for the destruction of the process that belies it. Unless they do that, the Church of England is finished. I'm Peter Old. This is Radio Free Canterbury. And may God have mercy on us all.